Hey everyone, it's the weekend, so it's time for the Weekender. On this week's show, we have an amazing prize from Stoessi's Heroes, a really cool set of German hero miniatures. This stuff would look perfect in your Bold Action Army. Yeah, really cool stuff. We're going to talk about this more in the indie section. For your chance to win, comment, like, share, and subscribe here on YouTube. And to double your chances, come on over to ontabletop.com and comment there too, because we're going to pick a winner at random from both sets of comments. Right, the weekend starts now. Hey everyone, Weekender time. This week I'm joined by Jerry.
Wherever I am, yep.
Somewhere over there. Well, Ben and Jerry are here. The ice cream duo. And I'm, of course, Lloyd. We're missing a screen. The big guy who fills the screen has disappeared. He's off being celebrated by his kids for an achievement of getting older.
Yes. Yeah. Another solar rotation.
That's it. Successful journey around
that's
the sun.
It. I like that. Yeah. Solar rotation day. That's the one. I like that a lot.
That's what it will be called in the next sort of grim, dark sci-fi film that comes out from Hollywood. Ah, you've passed your solar rotations.
Well, how many solars are you? Gosh. Solars. Solars? I'm kind of distracted. Thinking about something else. I might mention it on the backstage. Yeah. I might not.
You don't get distracted in this show. That's for the other one. Yeah.
Okay. Right. So, Ben, do you want to do a little recap, a little get us in? Oh, actually, before we get stuck in, look at my t-shirt. I got a funny story about my t-shirt. Look at my nice UK Games Expo t-shirt.
Yes.
I walk into the room the other day, the bedroom, and the missus is sitting in the middle of the room surrounded by UK Games Expo t-shirts. And I'm like, oh, amazeballs, you found all my t-shirts. I asked, class. And she's like, yeah, I know it's class. I'm going to cut them all up to make face masks. And I'm like, no, you're f***ing not. I need these.
This is work attire.
That was last year's show. Look, do you see a date anywhere on here? We're smart. We can use this again. Cut them up for face masks, indeed. Jeez Louise. That was close. I could have been sitting here naked with no more branded t-shirts to wear.
I'd just like to imagine that it would have just been like two perfect face masks right there. Just revealing. Just a Lloyd nip shot.
Yes. Yeah. Ciao, ciao. Oh, speaking of cool things to look at, other than my nip. We had a post out last week for the May the 4th day, Ben, didn't we?
So we put together a really cool post that was out on Monday for May the 4th, obviously, and it was looking at a whole bunch of stuff that we've put together over the last couple of years when it comes to Star Wars and that kind of thing. So there's loads of Let's Plays in the mix that we've done for Star Wars Legion. There's a selection of big unboxings as well. A host of big, massive build videos that we've done for some of the big tables. So we did loads of them for our sort of Star Wars weekend. We did loads of them for a big ATA ambush when Star Wars Legion came out as well, which is really cool.
This stuff here on the hobby weekend that we're looking at on the screen now with the Millennium Falcon and stuff, that was really cool. That turned out really well, considering the time scale that we were doing that in. And the ATAT stuff, if you're looking at that, the ATAT and Endor, there's a whole page. If you're in the Cult of Games, you can go in and you can actually go down this and hire an entire blog series, 12 videos no less, of how that gets pulled together. Yeah. Wait, let me just bring that up. Look how cool that is.
Yeah, that was a really awesome series to see that come together. You know, destroying beloved toys and everything like that to turn them into an amazing gaming table and that kind of thing. Very cool.
It was the sound as if a million nerds cried out and were suddenly silenced.
Yeah. Now, we've also got the Battle of Hoth that we've had being played out, Salute and stuff, and it's been to Adepticon 2, one of our best builds we've ever done for a big table.
I'll try and flick into where there's some lights and stuff. Look at that. It's all lit up. Oh, look at that. How cool is that? So, yeah, definitely check that video out as well.
Yeah, plenty of awesome stuff we did after that. Yeah.
It was like 20 feet long. Look at that.
It was.
These days, you'd be able to do that all in upholstery foam.
That's it.
We should redo that.
So definitely redo that all in upholstery foam.
Yeah, come back to this. Yeah.
If you're a Cult of Games member, you know what we're talking about. And if you're not, who are you? Who are you? The secret of upholstery foam.
Yeah, but for those people that maybe aren't playing Star Wars Legion, there's also a big section there where we covered some stuff from X-Wing, where we did a sort of in-atmosphere battle on Endor, which was played out through a live blog. So we made the table and came up with all the rules for playing that on the tabletop. So you can, I think you can probably still download the stuff for that, to be honest. Whether or not it needs tweaking for the second edition, I don't know. But
it definitely probably needs tweaking, and it's definitely floating around somewhere.
It's somewhere in the ether there somewhere, yeah.
Nothing goes away from the internet. Everything is still there.
Yeah.
Very true.
And apart from the old stuff, we had a couple of new unboxings as well. So I think Vader came out on May, or Revenge of the Sith, as nerds call it. And then we had Luke as well on Friday. So the two operative expansions for Legion. So,
yeah.
So if you something want old, something new.
Pop on over to On Tabletop. We've got a whole section about that. It's really cool.
Star Wars never ends.
We've teased it in the opening. They are the prize this week, the really cool miniatures from Stoessi's Heroes. Who's going to tell us more about this indie of the week?
Do you want to take the lead there, young Benjamin?
Yeah, sure. I'll lead the way. So Stoessi's Heroes are a company that have been around for a couple of years now, and their big focus is on creating not necessarily armies of figures and that kind of thing, but personalities from the era of World War II. They have covered things like the British and the sort of Soviets and the US and all the kind of the allied factions. They've also done stuff for the Axis as well. They've done things with the Japanese forces and all kinds of things as well. And there's even some like resistance fighters in there too. But effectively what they do, really sort of every couple of months, they'll come out with maybe 5 or 6 different figures, and each of them will be a miniature that has either existed in reality or in a Hollywood film of some kind.
Yeah.
And so, they each come with a bunch of fluff and background to each of the characters as well.
So I've just brought this is the homepage.
Yes.
Yeah. So what if I click into these, are these each individual collections or what's this?
So on that homepage there with the blog, is that's their sort of Meet the Heroes section. So when you click on that, you'll get you'll get sort of like a little bit of background text on the characters, or whether or not they've come from a Hollywood film or something like that as well. And you'll also learn about their story as well as seeing the miniature too. So it's a really nice repository of kind of knowledge for understanding what all these characters did in history and that kind of thing. And obviously, as you can see here, there's a lot of them that were in movies, but also existed as real characters in reality as well. So, yeah.
Right, so the movie, and then there's some more details on the character, moving on down, and then you get to the actual miniature as well that represents it.
And a lot of them are based effectively on the photography from the period as well. So they'll have found all the footage from back then, and they'll have tried to create the characters so that look like them as well. So if you have people, if you want to try and make your force very authentic, this is the kind of place you go to try and pick up some characters to play games with and stuff. So,
well, here's the Germans, but look, no, that's all heroes. So we'll start off with these Germans because these are the ones we're giving away. Is that right, fellas?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
this is indeed some of them. So people like Hans von Luck there, who, depending on how you view him, he was either incredibly unlucky or very lucky. He tended to show up late to battles. You know, at D-Day, he arrived. He'd been somewhere else and it all kicked off and arrived into an area where there was a Panzer platoon, at least, sitting in reserve waiting because they hadn't received any orders. He told them to go to the front. They went, "You're not our boss." Mm-hmm. And he pulled his Luger out on the officer and went, "I really am." So, and then took command of a tank and led them forward. So he was a fascinating character. And it wasn't just one battle he was late for. He was late for several of them. But they're really interesting boutique range where they've got an awful lot of character because they're even if it's based off somebody that you may recognize from a movie,
like Coffee Pot there.
Coffee Pot from The Longest Day. I don't think he is based on a real German. He was just taken solely from the film. But the other ones where they picked up people like Von Luck or Otto Funk and Klaus there, the details they managed to capture on the figures themselves are absolutely stunning. And for just people who want to paint, don't want to do a full army, these little boutique figures have a ton of character and some great sculpts, and they're very unique. They're a little bit different than you would see in a lot of wargaming manufacturers' figures because they can take the time because they're not worried about 30, 40, 50 men going on the tabletop. They can just go, "I'll just have this one."
Yeah, it's mostly the movie heroes that I'm probably interested in.
Yeah.
Let's see. Who have we got?
That is Stanislav Sosabowski. You may remember him as being Gene Hackman in A Bridge Too Far. I was just checking what uniform you were wearing, General. Is that Polish, Gene? Is it? I don't think that is. Just pronounce every J like a hard C in your
brain. I don't know, Jerry. My wife's Polish, and you sound just like her when you do that. Almost exactly the same. Almost. Wow, really cool.
Mm.
Yeah.
And we have these in the studio as well. I believe we're going to do some unboxings in the upcoming weeks or whatever. Mm. Who knows? With you know,
with the way they're sitting there in a box, waiting for somebody to get their hands on them to unbox them. So we have a character or a hero from each of the major factions for us to have a look at. So we've got an American, we've got British, we've got Commonwealth soldier, Soviet. So yeah, we'll be revisiting them in more detail down the line, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. I've opened a bunch of links. So you guys got specific links you want to go to?
I know Ben has.
So. Yeah, hopefully there should be there's three that I wanted to pick out in particular. There's one for Mad Jack Churchill. Hopefully you've got that one.
Maybe. It must be easier if you open the link and then we try and fit it in.
So this guy, I think a lot of people will be familiar with Mad Jack Churchill. He's a little bit more of like a recognizable face when it comes to World War II. And he was, as the nickname would suggest, quite mad. He is photographed, I believe, leaping off a landing craft with a broadsword in hand, because that's what he did. A Scottish broadsword, I should say, with the basket hilt and stuff. He's also the last recorded person to have killed someone in combat with a longbow. So he is recorded as shooting a German officer with a longbow in battle.
I don't get it. How has he managed to carry his pack, carry a sword, carry bagpipes, and a longbow, and arrows?
He is that talented an individual.
He was eccentric. Yeah.
Is this who Rambo is actually based on?
Maybe.
No, they had to tone Rambo down. Yeah, yeah. You know, nobody will believe Mad Jack Churchill. Let's tone him down a bit and come up with Rambo.
There's a wonderful story about him when he would be commuting to work and he'd go home on the train every day. And every day he'd come home, he would open the train window and he'd toss his suitcase out of the window.
Right.
And the person who was on the train with him, after like a couple of days of him seeing him do this, said, why are you throwing your suitcase out of the window every time you come home? And he's like, oh, my garden's over there. I'm throwing it into the garden so I don't have to carry it back when I get off the train.
Delightful. So, I have a sneaking suspicion. I think he became a prisoner of war.
He was so intent on continuing to fight that I'm fairly sure he went off to the Eastern frontier and he was like helping. Well, he wanted to try and help with the against the Japanese and all kinds of like things like that. I think he's quoted as at one point saying that he wished the war had continued and they'd continued to fight the Russians and stuff as well. So
a bit of blood lost, maybe a bit.
Maybe just maybe.
I said back home he was like a chartered accountant or something. I'm just going because. If it's not him, then there's another lunatic Churchill. But I've a sneaking suspicion, because he was carrying the sword and he was called Churchill, that when he was captured, they assumed that he was some sort of British or English lord and nobility and related to Winston Churchill, and so he got sent to an officer's POW camp and not a regular one. I must go and have a look after the show and see, because that's tickling the back of my mind.
Yeah. The next character is a German one that I wanted to bring up, and it is Gunther Wiesnes. So he is was given, I believe it was the Iron Cross.
Nope.
Yep.
Yep.
That's him. Yep.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. He was awarded more tank destruction badges than anyone else in World War II, right? Of his, you know, ilk. Yeah. But that's because he single-handedly killed 21 enemy tanks with hand grenades, Panzerfaust, T-mines, and hollow charges. So this guy wasn't in a tank destroying tanks. He was on foot destroying tanks. That's how good he was.
He was the Panzernacker.
Yes. So, yeah. this is the kind of thing that I think is really great about the Stoicist Hero range as a whole, is that you get to see all these stories that you had no idea about. And it explores a lot of different characters. And it does that kind of thing that, you know, where like life is stranger than fiction, which I think is really cool. And you can get, if nothing else, it comes up with some interesting ideas for scenarios on the tabletop. Like maybe you want to show off Mad Jack Churchill and his band of renegades going into Normandy to go and fight the Germans. Or maybe you want to play out where he's, where Gunther is running around trying to destroy tanks with his Panzerfaust and stuff like that. So. Yeah.
Well, it's really cool, the diversity of miniatures on here as well, because we've got all sorts of factions and resistance. I was just looking at the Japanese a minute ago.
That resistance fighter would go absolutely beautifully with my Warsaw Rising Polish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I wonder because, if she's from them.
Yeah, they've told a whole bunch of nice individual stories, and a lot of them you wouldn't be overly familiar with as well, which is really cool.
Just for
they've even got Rasputin in metal form as well as in real form.
Looking good.
Yeah. And if you're going to play him in a game, you've got to make sure that he's incredibly hard to kill, of course.
So, yeah.
See, that's the Japanese. I was looking at these a minute ago.
So there's a couple of here. I think a couple of them are from Clint Eastwood's. Is it Clint Eastwood who did Iwo Jima? Was that the one that he did?
Yeah, Black Sands. Yeah. Letters from Iwo Jima and something. I can't remember. The Flags of Our Fathers were.
Yeah. So there's a couple from sort of the films, and there's also a few from real life as well.
Yeah.
So, cool. And on the US side of things, then the US. Finally, we're here.
Yeah, so as a lot of the US stuff is actually both pulled from the real life, and a lot of the filmic stuff is obviously in there as well.
Yeah.
Really good. Yep. There's a bunch of, because a lot of the time you collate sort of the US forces with, and obviously I know they're Commonwealth as well as just US, but there's also a lot of the Canadians in there as well alongside the US, which is pretty good. So there's really cool stuff there.
A guy on a card.
He was played by John Wayne in the film.
Who, this guy on the card?
Yep. Yeah. Benjamin van der Voort. he broke his leg. He was one of the paratroopers, commanding paratroopers. So he broke his leg when he landed, and he refused to wait behind. So he made his men pull him as they took the next objective and the next objective. It's just like, that's the road we have to go down. Put me down there.
Yeah. Is that heroic though, to like demand people pull you around the battlefield?
He could have stayed behind. He could have stayed back where it was relatively safe, as opposed to going, no, I need to lead my men.
But he wasn't. He got pulled around by them.
He did, but it meant if they ran into trouble, he was dead. He couldn't run away. Yeah. They could just run away and leave him.
Well, no, he had a cart to hide behind.
That's just a target in a big open field. That gives you something to aim at. Yeah. I do love them. Beautiful skills.
Yeah, the last character I wanted to bring out as sort of like a focal point is one of the Soviet ones. I know that mainly because it's another one of the slightly zany stories, and it's Ivan Pavlovich. And so this guy was a cook within the Soviet army. He wasn't, you know, high ranking in any way. And he was off cooking around a campfire, sort of, you know, cooking all the food for everyone when they returned, because all these men had got off on patrol, when he heard the rumble of a German tank rolling up behind him. Yeah. So he hid in the bushes with his axe for cutting wood and let all the tank crew get out of the tank and all that kind of thing. And then he ran out of the bushes, firing his machine gun and waving his axe around, making it sound like there were dozens and dozens of Soviet troops around, chased them all back into their tank, banged on the roof of it with his axe, managed to break the gun, and then got them, the entire tank crew, to surrender to him, and then escorted them out of the tank one by one. And so when all his mates came back, they found that he was suddenly surrounded by very sheepish-looking Germans in handcuffs. Well, not in handcuffs, but sort of bound and waiting under his command until everyone else returned. So, yes, he was quite an interesting fellow.
Could you imagine how dopey you would feel if you got out of the tank? Yeah. And you're all standing there looking at each other, and there's just one dude going...
One guy.
Yeah.
Do you want a biscuit? No.
But no, it speaks to the fortitude of not just the Soviet soldiers, but the Soviet cooks within their employ, that they are able to take on Germans in their masses and stuff. So yeah, some very cool characters.
StoicsHeroes.com. Is this stuff bolt action scaled then?
Yes. So it's all 28mm. Yeah, so it all fits with that. And it's all sort of true scale, so... Obviously, it fits with the kind of true look of a lot of the Warlord stuff and all the other ranges out there as well.
Yeah, it matches very well with the Perrys. proportion-wise.
Yeah. So it's a very nice match for a lot of armies that already exist, and obviously you can then take those to be like the figureheads of your big plastic armies and that kind of thing. So yeah.
Cool. Well, that's our indie of the week. Right. Next up, Ben. We're going to move on into some news.
Coming to you from the center of Northwestern Europe. Covering board games, war games, card games, and all that you love. It's the news.
So, gents, almost time for the news. Almost time for the news. My missus heard me in the background when I was going on about cutting up the t-shirts, so she bounded to defend herself.
Oh,
I was only going to cut those t-shirts up because they're such nice quality, Lloyd. Such nice quality. And I thought a branded face mask out of it. And I was like, maybe you should cut one of them up then if I can get a branded quality face mask out of it. There you go. Oh, actually, I scared her out of the room anyway. I sort of shooed her when I said the Jerry Donner impression of her, and it was pitch perfect. She got all embarrassed.
I'm staying out of this. I'm glad lockdown's on because I don't want to be hit. I bruise like a peach.
If I want rid of the missus, I just embarrass her and she's out the door. Great. Right. News, Ben. What's up first, mate?
So the first bit of news comes from the folks at Atomic Mass Games, and that is we are starting to see the pre-orders going up and live for all of their stuff in the next couple of waves, I guess. So there's some stuff coming out this month and also towards next month as well. We've got Black Widow and Hawkeye in the first set. So this is their sort of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. set. So a lot of people will remember that Black Widow was in the original core set for Marvel Crisis Protocol. But this is a sort of different take on her. So she's got a new card and new abilities and all that kind of thing as well. And obviously the new model, as you can see.
Have you painted Black Widow then, Jerry, if it was in the original set?
Yeah, I did. There's it'll be sitting on the shelf somewhere in the studio, not being loved currently. Those are based on the cartoon series.
Yes.
It's a very nice get up she's in. It's a lot less black, let's put it like that.
It's very much more going down the sort of route of the kind of sort of outfits they may have wore when they were back serving for S.H.I.E.L.D. rather than being part of the Avengers and all that kind of thing. So it's all cool. They're very nice stuff there.
Yeah. So wait, this will give you something to paint, considering you've painted all our stuff, Jerry.
back when they were murdering their way through various places.
Back when they were
assassins.
Doing
assassins. Yeah.
And next up, we've got, and you might not be able to see him because he's moving incredibly slowly, but we have Drax here alongside Ronan the Accuser. So those people that may have watched the films, you know that Drax has a particular hatred of Ronan the Accuser and Thanos as well.
I'm sitting here so confused during this whole thing going, does he move incredibly slowly? Does he? Are you trying to tell me there's a technical issue discreetly in the middle of your conversation?
It's just a single box.
Yeah, it's a lovable quote from the movies. But because there's a bit where he's watching.
I was confused and wanted to clarify what he thought about.
He's a bit where he's looking at Star-Lord and Gamora having a conversation and he's just in the background eating crisps. Doing it really, really slowly, and he's like, "You can't see me. I'm almost invisible." And that was such a joke and a meme that, in actual fact, when Atomic Mass took them to an event earlier, I think it was earlier in the year, they had just a blank base for Drax because they were like, "Hey, you see it, but he's not really here." So. But this set will give you Drax and Ronan the Accuser, so you can start to build up sort of Infinity War saga stuff and all that kind of thing for everything going on in Marvel Crisis Protocol. And this follows on into some more Thanos-based hijinks because we've also got Black Dwarf and Ebony Maw, who are two of the children of Thanos that are, you know, fighting alongside him as part of the Black Order within the sort of like his cabal of villains and stuff. So obviously you could use these alongside Thanos in some games on the tabletop, or you could use them mixed in with heroes and villains because obviously within Crisis Protocol, you can use anybody with anybody and you can make your own superhero or supervillain teams as you see fit. And obviously mind control is always a good way to do things. And Skrull is another good way to get past everything.
It's always Skrull.
It's always Skrull. And then sort of moving on from that as well, we had the big boy himself. So the man titan Thanos is also present. So this is one of the images that they shared last year, I believe, actually. And it's a version of him with the Infinity Gauntlet and the massive sort of throne terrain piece behind him. Although he is also available with, I believe it's a different head option, and also just a standard fist up in the air, sort of raised. So if you don't want him to be having, if you don't want him to have the Infinity Gauntlet all powered up, you can also do it that way as well. But he's obviously going to be coming into the game as one of the big sort of one versus many style fights that they're going to be doing for the game. But also, he can actually be used in normal games as well. So it'll be very interesting to see how many people bring Thanos into the mix to play in their games. And then lastly, we have the Cosmic Terrain Pack here. So this, like a lot of the other packs, comes with a bunch of new plastic terrain for you to use on the tabletop. And this is one of those things that is really great for those people that want to try and do something, for example, with Guardians of the Galaxy. Obviously, we've got Thanos here and the Black Order and all that kind of thing as well. So if you want to take things away from Earth to a different planet, then you've got some really cool sci-fi options here for you to be fighting around. And of course, because it's Marvel Crisis Protocol, all these things are probably interactable, so you can throw people into them or throw things at people and all that kind of thing, destroy them and stuff. So,
it's very Steve Ditko-esque as well, the sci-fi buildings like.
It's very cool,
Dig me some Thanos. he comes on this big chair.
Yeah, so you also get that, I believe you get the scenic bit as well.
The circular part at the bottom, it lifts out, so it's just a single base, or he can be set onto that. As far as I'm aware from the previews, just magnetize him up.
He's screaming to be contrast.
Swapped in.
Yeah, I think contrast would be really good for Thanos, actually.
Because I'm screaming to get more contrast.
In a variety of colors.
I believe we have stock incoming. Inbound! Yeah.
So but no, a lot of this stuff should be coming out either this month or the beginning of next. So if you're someone who's really enjoying the whole sort of Crisis Protocol thing, as a lot of people are, then you will have some options to dive in and pick up some new stuff very, very soon indeed. So,
sweet. Next up, fellas.
So next up, I believe we're heading to the world of Mythos. Talked about this a little bit in a show, was it 2 weeks ago now? It was 2 weeks ago now, when we talked about giving away a whole sort of big starter bundle for the game. But this is one of the factions that came out later in the life of the original Mythos, and this is the Wildborn. So War Cradle Studios have come back with some updated sculpts and some tweaked stuff for these characters. So you've now got a new faction starter set, which comes with a bunch of different creatures and the stuff, as you can see there, very much sort of blending itself into the idea of creating a faction that's not necessarily tied directly into something Lovecraftian, but just sort of working on the fringes and, you know, exploring a little bit more of that kind of folklore thing as well. So in the set, you get Dorothy Good and Blood. You also get Mercy Good, Lauren, Nagrageel, and Cernos. And for those cunning folk out there who know their folklore, there is a Knuckle of V in the middle of that set, which is very cool. So that's a little bit of a sort of Celtic thing going on in the background there. If you like yourself a little bit of Knuckle of V stuff, then you've got a little weird creature from the depths of folklore in the mix, which is very, very cool indeed. And again, really nice looking miniatures. You get everything else you need in the box to play the game. So you've got all the cards and all the things you need to play with those characters.
Which one, Ben? Because I don't know. Which one?
The Knuckle of V is the character in the center, the sort of like horse based centaur creature.
And it's Celtic.
Yeah, it's got Celtic sort of roots, up from sort of around the north coast of Scotland and that kind of thing. And so also,
do we have any in Northern Ireland? Can we have it? Can we claim it?
You may, I believe it is sort of a myth that it pervades around north of Scotland and as part of Ireland as well. So you never know. These creatures might dwell within the woods and come and get you.
That's cool. Maybe like Hellboy. She'll just pop out of nowhere and go, what is that? That's shiny.
It's Bane.
I want it. Give it to me, dude. I want that.
Isn't it been established that that's basically what Northern Ireland's like anyway? So
there was no makeup or anything required for that. It was the weirdest part of that film, seeing it in the cinema, was the
cheer
when they went to Northern Ireland.
Anytime we go anywhere and you're not on camera, like Salute or UK Games Expo, you'll just see the crew around. Not on camera, lads. What is that? I want it. Give it to me. It's tiny. I want it.
Like that when we're on camera most of the time.
Very true.
They are gorgeous scubs. I was lucky enough to see one of the resins for, I don't know which one it is. It's the huge Wolfie fella at the back, which,
oh right, yeah.
You know, I could be whatever he is.
I believe that's Cernos.
Is that Cernos?
It's like Cernos and the Hunter sort of thing. Yeah.
You would think. But who knows? He is covered in eyeballs.
Oh, eyeballs. I knew it was some kind of balls, but it wasn't some kind of balls.
Yeah. Everywhere you look, in places you would not expect them to be, there's eyeballs and bony tentacles and tendrils sticking out of all sorts of nooks and crannies. So, because when I first looked at it, I was like, oh, he looks like a werewolf. And then you look in my eyes, werewolf with a skull head. No, he's not. Oh, Lord, that's not right. And then at that point, you move, drift gently back towards the mythos feel there where everything's just slightly off.
Yeah, it's one of the cool things about, obviously, all the things they've done for mythos and all the stuff that existed as well in the past is that it's all got a very unique feel to it.
It's Lovecraft parallel or tangential. It's not actually, I don't think anything they've released has actually been, oh, that's definitely been mentioned in one of the stories or one of the books or one of the games. It's always just that it has that feel that it could exist within his worlds.
Yes,
it's great stuff.
Very cool. People went nutty for the prize last week or the week before.
Yeah.
When was it you were giving away? Was it a
feel
week
their sanity.
Two weeks ago.
Yeah.
We gave away the battle group stuff last week. So.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Very popular. Right.
Lots of competition prizes.
What's up next, gents?
So next up, we're looking at the range from Signum Games, who do a game called Legend of Signum, which is kind of like a little bit of a hybrid between sort of like a board game and a miniature war game. And recently, one of the things they've been looking at is pre-orders for a new selection of miniatures. So this is called the League of Plague Doctors. Mm. So this is a bunch of different creatures from their world that are sort of combined together to be hunting down the plague and eradicating it from the world. As I say...
could be doing with some of these then, couldn't we?
We probably could, yeah. And as some people said, it's too soon, but anyway, but yes.
it's been 400 years. People need to let the Black Plague go.
We do, yeah. We should let those rats, you know, get the right support that they need and that kind of thing. It wasn't their fault. But anyway, so in the set, in the sort of basic set, so everything that's not purple at the moment, you get Agnello Cornano, the Plague Angel, Bianca Morella, Countess of the Plague, Sebastiano Riaro, Mentor of the Lodge, Enrico Dianzi, Dr. Mosquito, and Domenico the Quarantine Guard. And then in addition to that, as part of the pre-order bonus, you also get Kelly Gampana, who is the one in the sort of purple glow at the back.
Mm.
And as I was saying, Signum Games have been doing some amazing stuff over the last couple of years for their game, Legend of Signum. It's all sort of very quirky, slightly odd fantasy miniatures that are sort of taking a lot of aesthetics that people know and love and sort of putting a new twist on it and sort of playing around with the ideas as well.
Have you got one there, Jay?
I've got many of them. But yeah.
I'm trying to embiggen you.
Good luck embiggening me because it's very it's very pale, but there's a knight on the back of a griffin.
Yeah.
So even if you're not, I mean, I don't play their board gamey type thing, but these miniatures are absolutely fantastic for a ton of fantasy games. So
yeah, very true.
He will be leading my Kingdoms of Men or Basilean army for Kings of War because their sculpts are absolutely terrific. And they have a nice blend of very clean, crisp casting without a ton of overly fussy detail. Coupled with enough detail, so if you're a painter, there's oceans of free space on banners and pennants and tabards and that sort of thing to get in there and do really excellent sort of freehand work. And if you're not big into your painting, you can get away with a wash, a contrast, or a dry brush. Their stuff is terrific, and the range is, like you say, it's very quirky. I mean, Dr. Mosquito there picking up rats from a distance and chuck them in his bag is just hilarious as he floats above.
Is this Dr. Mosquito?
No, top right. See the one with the hat on?
Oh, there we go. Obviously, we go, Dr. Mosquito.
Look at him.
Hold on. I think there's a bigger picture further down.
Just floating around, living life to the max. enjoying not stepping on anything in the street, which I imagine is quite...
Enjoying his very short lifespan, as all mosquitoes do. Yeah.
That's interesting, because even though they have that very distinct Plague Doctor look to them, especially the Countess, they almost have that Carnivale Venetian mask feel to them. You know, that they could easily fit into either of those.
That's so cool. I want that just for the rats. My missus hates rats. She hates bats as well. We were out last night having our one walk of the day, and there was a bat flying around. I couldn't help it. I was like straight onto the back of her head, eating in her ear. I think she's getting sick of lockdown. Or is it just sick really? Of me?
I think she's getting sick of you, yeah.
I'm not going to comment on this.
But no, the guys at Signum Games have done some really nice stuff. It also bears in mind that their web store is quite vast. And they've done such things before as, you know, something that may or may not be related to something like Geralt the Witcher in sort of their world and all kinds of things like that. So they've done some really nice miniatures that cross a whole bunch of different worlds. And obviously, as we said, the quality looks pretty great as well.
Something painted here as well.
Yeah, they've done a particular... They've actually done a separate game, which was just about sort of like a dragon hunt as well, which is really cool. And that's like a stealth contained game alongside the main one, which comes with loads of really nice miniatures and all kinds of things like that. So if you want to get like a snippet of their world, then you can go and get that game in particular.
Oh, what's this? Hold on, gents. This has to be seen. What is this?
That is a rat carrying skull of a Pope.
Oh, I want it.
It's a whole herd of rats. See? Hopefully we will be getting a couple of unboxings done soon, because they've actually sent us Spider Elf box and the Alliance of the Unicorn.
Oh, yeah.
So I think the Unicorn is like a Celtic nature army, lots of elves, lots of minotaurs and werewolves and stuff. And then the Spider Elves are just wrong. So... I don't know if somebody's going to pick those up in the studio and do an unboxing, or if they'll get shipped out to me to try and do an unboxing. But hopefully in the next few weeks we'll get those under the camera somewhere and have a closer look, because their stuff has to be seen to be believed. It's absolutely stunning.
So next up, moving away from Legend of Signum and Signum Games, we've actually got some stuff from a company that we looked at a couple of weeks ago as part of the Indie of the Week, and that is Warplot Miniatures. So they are on Patreon right now with their campaign, which started in May. And this is for, well, their first initial set is for a little goblin warband. So if you're someone who loves the goblins, then you've got some choices to go and dive in and play around with here. All of these are available as 3D printable STL files, as compared to the sort of normal stuff that Alex Huntley does, which is all sort of hand sculpted. But a lot of the characteristics of his hand sculpting work has translated over really nicely into the 3D prints, as you can see here. Lots of the sort of like exaggerated features and heroic proportions, that kind of thing. But this particular warband obviously could work within the world of Arkworld, but they'd be done in such a way that they could be also used as an agnostic faction as well for lots of different games, if you'd like that too. As part of the Patreon for right now as well, there's also a starter pack that you get when you first sort of get involved, which gives you that little pack of terrain. Yeah, so that's a little welcome pack that they get when you start. And obviously it's themed towards the goblins at the moment, which is very cool. And because it's 3D STL files, you can download this and print it off as many times as you like to make yourself an entire goblin village, if you were so inclined to do so. As part of the Patreon as well, Warplot have also been sort of taking suggestions from the community and that kind of thing as well. And so they've been working on additional things in the future. So they're going to be working out exactly what mounts to take for the different warbands and that kind of thing. And they're also tinkering around with sort of like weapon options and different characters and that kind of thing as well. So yeah, you can actually see some of the stuff they've been working on the right-hand side of that screen if you scroll back up again. So you can see they've been looking at the different mounts that they've got coming up as well for the game. So yeah, some very cool stuff. But yeah, the Patreon is now live. So if you want to go and get involved, bung a little bit of money Alex Huntley's way for Warlock Miniatures and sort of help out. A lot of companies are doing this kind of Patreon thing right now. Obviously, we've talked about the fact that Westphalia Miniatures are doing something similar as well. So there are a lot of 3D printing files out there from a lot of different companies, and they're doing sterling work that you can print off at home and tinker with as you see fit. So yeah, very cool.
Awesome. Cool. Coming up next is...
So next up, we've got some stuff which is also within the 3D printing realm. And this is from 3D Alien Worlds. And these guys... There was a glitch in the Matrix, but we're back now. So they've been working on a bunch of different things right now. And a lot of it is focused towards the idea of both historical and fantasy-based 3D kits for you to print off to using all your samurai guns and that kind of thing. So the first thing that we covered, I think it was a couple of weeks ago now, is this fantastic samurai tea house, as you can see here. So all of the individual components are 3D printable, and you can sort of get in and around and create a really fascinating little area for you to play your games in. Say you were looking for something that would be a, very much like a focal point for your games, this is the kind of thing that you could use. And as you can see there, you even, you know, got the detail on the inside of these houses and everything as well when you're printing these off at home. So a really, really nice little tea house set that he's done. But this is not, that's just like the sort of base of all the things that are available as part of the 3D Alien Worlds collection. Recently as well, this week, we'll have a look at the website as well, but actually you can see it here. In fact, they've got a whole bunch of stuff here. So they've gone like castle walls and gates and guard towers. And it's not just the fantasy stuff and like sort of historical things. They've also done absolutely oodles of sort of like sci-fi bits and pieces as well. So in particular, if you like the idea of things like the Necrontyr and Necrons in 40K, they've got those kind of things going on as well. Yeah, some really fantastic looking sort of bits and pieces. And as I was saying, it's all 3D printable. So you basically just take these and, you know, print them off at home to your, at your leisure and put them together into some fascinating setups and stuff on the tabletop. But yeah, and it's all obviously scaled to 28mm, but because it's 3D printing, you could, you know, make it bigger or smaller and use it for whatever you want to use it for. So yeah.
Make it slightly bigger, use it all for Yuching, for
you could
Infinity.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I always like that. Occasionally, you'll see that pop up in anime and the like, where you've got this super futuristic sci-fi Neo Tokyo, and then in amongst all these huge skyscrapers, there'll be just like a tiny little
classic
traditional tea house.
Yeah,
and then ninjas attack. Oh, you know, damn ninjas!
Yeah.
That's lovely. I was thinking, especially when one of our community members was painting that up recently, the Japanese stuff.
I know that when we talked about them originally, when we first were looking at their, I believe it was their Eldari and Necrontyr stuff, we were actually looking at some of their bits and pieces, and I believe a lot of people went over and downloaded a couple of their files and used them as part of their armies and such and their terrains for the tabletop. Yeah. I know in particular, like a lot of people use it for Test of Honor and use things for that as well.
Test of Honor and Bushido and Roman. Yeah,
and that kind of leads me into the next story that we covered from them, which was for their Nobori flags. So as well as doing all that terrain and stuff, they've also done some sort of accessories and bits and pieces to go alongside all of that. And so one of those sets was the Nobori flags that you can see there. So they are used effectively for sort of like adorning your castles and your terrain and things. So you could use them to mark who owns what and that kind of thing. But the thing that I thought, the thing that I thought would be really cool though, is if you use them as activation markers for your units. So say you're playing a larger game or something on the tabletop, you could use the flags to mark which units have activated or when they've done particular movements, that kind of thing. And it'd be very kind of in-world and keep things looking a bit more sort of like scenic on the tabletop rather than throwing lots of like, you know, gems and stuff onto the tabletop at the same time. So, yeah, very cool.
Sweet. Same place, 3D Aliens Worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously, we're big fans of 3D printing and trying that kind of thing out. And we know it's obviously still an emerging material sort of like medium as it were, but it's definitely worth having a look at and seeing if anyone nearby actually sort of works in 3D printing as well. So yeah, very cool.
I like physical things.
What are we going on?
No, I know you do.
Well, it is physical when you print it. You can take your musings from your mind and make them physical.
I think I speak for everyone watching when I say nobody wants to see that.
I do. I want to see the day we can plug your brain into a 3D printer and see what you were thinking about. Being printed in real time.
Well, one of the things that may be
booting us.
One of those things that may be sort of dwelling around in Jerry's brain is some of the fixed bayonets for Schumacher, which we're looking at next. So it seems right now that anyone doing anything to do with World War II is making Fallschirmjäger, because we've had it coming from a bunch of different companies. But Fixed Bayonet are a small company that I wanted to just highlight, because they've been put together three different sort of kits for you to use in when putting together your German armies for World War II. Mm-hmm. So you've got two teams of Fallschirmjäger riflemen there, as you can see, all in very dynamic poses, which is a big plus from me. I hate it when you see things put down on the tabletop for skirmishing firefights and nobody looks like they're doing anything. It looks really boring. So it's really nice to see people, you know, actually putting motion and dynamism into their sculpts, as you can see here, and sort of like calling people forward and firing and reloading and that kind of thing as well.
Yeah,
that's it. They all look like they're getting ready to attack whatever came out of Jerry's brain.
If you need to push it back in.
it's probably them that came out of my brain. Yeah. It's nice to see Paul Schumacher.
Yeah, and as well as the two sort of painter kits that you can see there, they also put together another kit, which hasn't been painted yet on their web store, but it's for a machine crew, as you can see.
All right.
And this is a proper machine gun crew that's all set up and ready to go, rather than the poor guy in the image above who's having to rest it on his shoulder as his mate fires the machine gun next to his ear. So yeah.
I can't find it. Hold on. Oh, there we go.
There we go. Yes.
Weirdly, they were probably the same gun.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. I believe they are the same gun. Just one is mounted and one.
It was, yeah, just German tactical doctrine was if you wanted a light machine gun for your squad, you put it on a bipod, and if you wanted a more heavy suppressing machine gun, you put it on a tripod where it's a bit more stable.
This poor sod here is basically Spud from Black Hawk Down.
Yes. What?
What?
Oh, that's a good movie. I like that movie.
I always freaks me out seeing Spud pop up. What is Spud doing in this movie?
Because obviously his mate Renton was keeping an eye on him.
True, yeah.
So, next bayonets. Cool website. Yeah, I'm going to check that one out.
Yeah, so they're relatively new as well, but they're sort of growing their range and sort of developing it going forward. But yeah, we started with some Germans earlier on in the episode, and we're finishing some news off here with some other Germans. So yeah,
so cool. Finishing strong. Right, gents, we'll take a wee swish and then we'll be back to talk about some more stuff.
Did you win one of our prizes? Find out on our prize claim center over at ontabletop.com. Here we list all our previous prizes and those who have won. If you see your username, fill out the form to claim your prize. All prizes must be claimed within 30 days. Congratulations if you're a winner!
So, gents, if we don't end this show soon, I know we got some more to talk about this afterwards, I'm going to have no t-shirts left because my missus is nothing if not determined. Wait! You haven't even... Wait, you see what's happening to me over here. Where do you see this? This is ridiculous.
You stand up and the backside has been cut out of your trousers. I'm leaving.
Assless trousers.
Perfectly good stuff t-shirt, for goodness sake.
I like how all the OTT t-shirts have been put to one side as being not allowed to be touched, but other t-shirts are, you know, valid.
Look at it. No sleeve. No sleeve, tank top, still have a back for somewhere. Yeah, no more back here. There's a back.
It's like a boob tube. It's good.
It's a new styly.
Yeah, I mean, not to you know, reference very weirdly, but you do look like you're part of Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch now. So
it's ridiculous. I jump into the room to make one video, and she's going on about PPE, and look at the cut of me.
Wow.
It's not PPE. Ridiculous.
Sorry. Oh, dear. You've broken Jerry.
Look at it.
I'm having a hard time not looking.
Flipping YouTube videos about making face masks. Watch out, man. Watch out. You'll have no t-shirts left. Perfectly good t-shirt. She says there was a spot on it. It had to be ripped up.
Oh, no.
I don't know. This is a gift, too. Look, Donna John, look at the t-shirt. Look at it now. At least you're going to keep me safe, apparently. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. What have we come back for, Dents? Oh, I believe we're going to hell. I'm already there. Look, clearly I'm dressed like it.
Well, yes. We are indeed going to hell. In this case... Mythic Games' new game, the Hell, the Last Saga, is coming to Kickstarter very shortly. So they've been teasing quite a lot about it recently, and I was jammy enough to manage to get to sit down with Sam Healy from America. Well, I say sit down. We both sat down, but there was a continent or so between us as we did a virtual playthrough. So yeah, it's been fascinating over the past week, just kind of getting to grips with the game in the background and all of that. Have you got...
What are the miniatures and stuff like for this then?
It's a hodgepodge of stuff. Now, I was playing in Tabletop Simulator, so we were using standees based on the artwork, but we've seen a lot of the renders. So you've got essentially 13 clansmen that are a variety of people from this semi-mythological Viking age, and then there's a whole bunch of beasties.
Nice. If I go to our Facebook page, will I see pics?
You'll see a ton of pics,
So what they've been doing over the last 2 or 3 weeks, I believe, is they've been putting up a bunch of artwork, renders, and miniatures, painted miniatures by Seb Levine, who a lot of people will know, from the range. So a whole bunch of different characters and stuff that they've been working on. And this has all been done alongside their a community as well. So what they've been doing is they've been putting up a choice of two characters, and then the community gets to vote on which ones you see next and that kind of thing. And as well as seeing the painted miniatures you can get here, they've also been dropping little hints about the background and stuff of the different characters and some of the creatures as well. Like, for example, there we've got, I think they're called the treetop ones, because what they're doing with these is there are dark forces out there in the land. They don't want to spoil too much about it, but they've been showing a couple of the different miniatures off, because obviously Epic Games do like their miniatures. And these are some of the things that are slinking around in the shadows, looking to hunt down your survivors as they head out on their journeys.
Well, we are hoping to get Leo on the show next week to talk about the background and the world of Hell.
Is this hitting Kickstarter then?
It's due to come to Kickstarter this coming Tuesday.
Yeah.
And also on that Tuesday, assuming everything works out okay, the Let's Play with myself and Sam should be going up on our site then as well, so people can get a chance to see one half of the game, because it is very much a game of two halves.
That's going to be entertaining, just watching Jerry trying to use the technology.
I'm trying to throw out there, I was better at using the technology than Sam was. there was an awful lot of, why can't I not pick this up? Now, occasionally, to be fair, I did fire all the virtual dice into the air and they never came down again. Or, you know, people will be glad to know my dice rolling is the same in the digital world as it is in the analog world. So many blanks.
That's a good point. How am I going to break my dice?
No, physics engine is the way to do it.
One of the things that I have liked from what we've seen in the previews so far, and obviously we'll go into a little bit more detail about this next week and next week as well, but I really like that they've taken a lot of sort of classically Norse and sort of Dark Age characters and then created a little bit of a spin on them. So for example, you've got the berserker who's missing a hand and he's like very disheveled and he's got like a battered broken sword and that kind of thing.
This one's creepy. This one just took me to hell.
Yeah, so that's the fool character.
The fool, yeah, he is a little bit mental.
That is creepy.
A little bit.
And a lot of the characters, even though they're sort of they seem like they're all together, there's something a little bit wrong about each of them, or a little bit different, and there's a reason that they've all come to this place and that kind of thing as well. It's really fascinating, and especially since the game is very much focused on the idea of like storytelling and narrative, and so having characters that are evocative and interesting like that is very good, and it kind of feeds into the idea that this is a story not just about warriors, but it's a story about everyday folk as well, trying to get by and survive as well. Yeah. So it's very cool.
Because, I mean, essentially with this, it is a ongoing story. So you start in a narrative way and each story is broken up into chapters/scenarios. So you can have like 3 to 4 per story. But they're all sealed when the game will be delivered, so you won't see what's coming. And even things like you open it up and you place everything sorted out in advance, you shuffle and set down, so you never see what the cards are until you draw them. Everything is new the first time you play through it, so it has a legacy feel because you don't know what's coming. And then the choices you make may give benefits to your character later on, or change how they develop as you go. So it's fascinating to see that play out, because it was really interesting to play through. We played a camp scenario, and at the end of it, we ended up with a character who could have had a very different set of abilities for the ongoing story that we would have progressed with if we had done a few things differently. I'm not going to say whether we won, lost, or whatever, but just the choices you make, even if you complete a scenario, you can have multiple characters having sort of branching stories and changes their personality. Because mechanically, you start with this group and certain scenarios will tell you you have these choices. So you only have these 13 characters, but you may get a choice of all 13. And then you play like a draft. So it's like a 1-4 player game. So the person who drafts first may pick the queen or the fool or the one-handed berserker, and then the next person picks the next person. But you could pick up a scenario and it'll go, you can only choose from these 8, or you can choose anybody you want except this one and this one who are out of the game. So the scenarios are linked together to form this long narrative, but there's still an awful lot of choices that people can make, and the choices that you come up with and the things you do will reflect how easy or difficult it can be.
I got some web pages here, Jared. Does anything here reflect what you were talking about?
Yeah, so that big thing there is at the center of the camp, which is, I won't ruin the story, but it's the first thing you see when you land in this island and get off the waves. There we go there. So that narrative game part, the campaign map, is split into two different types. So the camp is a fixed board. Now the scenarios may change and spawn points may change and objectives and the rest, but it's a fixed thing, like 5x5 hex map or something like that. But then when you play a expedition, so when you're ranging out from there, you get tiles and the tiles explore. So you build your map as you explore and you get that RPG feel where, like, you know, in Fable, you always could go back to your little townhouse, but then the rest of the map's all grayed out. So until you actually go and explore those areas, you won't see what those areas are or what's coming towards you. So that was interesting. And there you see another mechanic, because you don't just have wounds on your characters, although you do have wounds on your characters, but there are three resources that you have to deal with as well when you're playing, certainly when you're playing the camp scenario that I played. I'm not sure if the expedition has the same sort of thing, but you've got morale, you've got food, and you've got wood that you need to look after as well. So it's not enough that everybody's up and fighting. If you run out of, if your morale drops, you could fail and lose the scenario. If you don't have wood to keep the fire going, then you fail, or wood to build your palisades, then you fail, or food to feed your group. So there's an almost a resource management Euro style game, and then you've got like a war gamey, board gamey style game that just sort of meshes, and it meshes very well. It's fascinating, the aspects that they've managed to get with a very simple sort of semi RPG feel to it.
Yeah, one of the things I've really liked in kind of that sort of RPG-esque feel of things is that you've got that sort of the storytelling and the way that it's all done is very nicely. I think there's like 900 paragraphs worth of dialogue they've talked about being as part of this campaign. So there's a lot of stuff to read and get involved in, that kind of thing. And even, like, as we were saying earlier, that set of cards you get at the beginning will come with lots of their own text and set parameters for how scenarios will play out and that kind of thing as well, which is very cool. The other aspect of it that I've really liked from looking through the previews is that, as well as it being obviously about sort of Norse mythology and that kind of thing, they've also brought in a lot more of the aspects from Christianity and also like a wild, almost feral sort of belief system as well. So there's lots of different warring religions and everything going on in the background, which is really cool because it sort of shows that kind of time period within the Dark Ages, or in this fantasy Dark Ages, where things were a little bit in flux and that kind of thing as well. So it all plays into this evolving storyline that seems like it's going to be an absolutely fascinating play to get through. So
sweet, and the artwork's looking amazing. These guys always do such great artwork for their games. The artists they connect with are just fabulous.
Yeah, the artists for the games, Seb Levine's painting for a lot of the promotional stuff as well is just superb. He's the person who got me, who reminded me that you can actually paint 15 mil and it looked good. So,
well, this is all 15 mil.
No, that's all. This is all 20. This is all sort of 28, 32 mil. But back when they were doing Joan of Arc, he was painting a lot of the 15 mil stuff.
Look at that. That's just the styling of this. Look at the styling.
There's the
queen.
That's
almost as good as my styling. Almost.
The queen. Yeah, well, yeah, she does fade halfway down there.
Hey. Just, I started a trend.
Stay where you are.
It was definitely one of the themes throughout a lot of the artwork as well, is that it's kind of, you know, and this is just me sort of speculating, but you've got these characters here that look, you know, very larger than life, and they're sort of fading into the background of the island they're exploring. So maybe they're, you know, sort of becoming one with it and all that kind of thing as well. So it's very eerie.
Banksy on us there.
Yeah, very full of horror and everything within this game as well. So there's lots of interesting storytelling beats that they're looking to sort of unpack as part of Hell. So,
when you see this, right? Look at that artwork. And then look how well the money captures that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does look like a grumpy git, doesn't he?
And if you didn't, if you were wondering, oh, is that just a companion that's going to be sort of just there? They actually are companions that will help you in the game. So he has a dog and stuff. So yeah,
you say that. Big rock too.
But I found that my companion dog didn't help me in the game. He sucked quite dramatically. But yes, the companions, and the companions are another. Both combat and resource choice when you're playing. So you, you know, you can look at it and you have to balance how and when these things are going to be used.
Sounds like it's going to be a really interesting proposal as a board game, because we've obviously seen them do the kind of storytelling thing before when they did Solomon Kane.
Yeah.
But this seems to be sort of like developing it a little bit more and adding a lot more sort of narrative and kind of RPG-esque mechanics into the mix, rather than it being a little bit more sort of like the miniature side of things that we saw with Solomon Kane. Yeah. So it's a nice transition into something a little bit different yet similar from the guys at Mythic.
And it's very simple to play. If you've played any RPG before, where you've got the likes of strength, con, dex, willpower, blah blah blah, you'll very quickly recognize similar archetypes. But the system itself, it's based around, is ridiculously simple, because they have a set of custom dice with, you know, like two single successes, one double success, two special sides and a blank, or something to that effect. And they're used for everything. Mm-hmm. And you only roll for you. So you only roll for your characters. You never roll for your opponent, because the opponents are all automatic successes. They don't need to roll defense. They don't need to roll attack. They just come in with a specific number. And that's your target. So your target is, if they've come in with a defense of three, you need three or more successes. Because, or if they're attacking you and they have four, that's four automatic hits on you. They're not rolling. Mm-hmm. So that they will never come in and fluff a roll. And that way you don't have to worry about this. Sometimes when you're playing a cooperative game like this, then, you know, the person to your right rolls against you. And then somebody like me comes in and goes, no hits on you. And you go, great. And then you come to hit me with something else later on and kill my character. No, these are sets. So you very quickly will get into the swing of things as to how these mechanics work. So it's very intuitive and very easy to pick up.
Cool. How long did your game take?
Now, probably about 2 hours.
Simulator, so you're trying to figure out how the world works.
Roughly about 2 hours. And the games are pegged to be sort of that kind of thing, between 1.5, 2 hours-ish, maybe a bit longer for some of the later ones.
I think they've said that in total, they suggest that it's probably about 80 hours worth of gameplay.
Yeah.
So that kind of puts you in mind of the kind of stuff that they've got lined up. And that's obviously, bearing in mind that, you know, things might go wrong and you might need to replay things and all that kind of thing as well. But the storyline, just to assuage people, does kind of lead you to allow for certain things going wrong and all that kind of thing as well. Mm. So they've got some interesting things in the pipeline for this one. So.
Sweet. Goes live next week on May 12th.
Tuesday 12th. Yep.
At 8 p.m. BST.
That's us, yep.
So if you're looking for some of that action, that's the way to go. And if you're looking for some of this action, I'll be
please don't.
Setting up a Patreon for Lloyd Stylings. And it'll be live next week and we'll feature it on the show.
Oh, dear Lord.
I got to get out of this. Kickstarter time next, gents. All right, gents, Kickstarter time. What's been tickling you this week?
So the first Kickstarter that has been tickling me rightly is... is from Shieldwolf Miniatures, and it is, I'm going to say this in my best grimdark voice, Imperium Immortalis. So this is a new range of polyurethane resin kits that they are working on for you to use in your grimdark games, or not necessarily grimdark, could be something else, could be, you know, something like sci-fi. But no, it is definitely Grimdark, but yeah.
This looks like the best non-40K army ever.
That's going to be Lloyd's quote on the box when this comes out.
So. Best non-40K army ever.
Yeah.
And then Jay's underneath. Jay, what do you think?
Oh, Victoria Lamb's Praetorians are by far the best non-40K army ever. So you're wrong. But you're
best 40K army ever, says Lloyd. No, says Jerry. Okay.
But yeah, the Kickstarter is focusing on creating effectively all the things you'd need to create an army for the game whenever you're playing it. So you've got lots of infantry and cavalry-based options in the mix. Each of them are broken down into different raiding parties and also different army designations as well, depending on what you want to pledge for it as well. As well as the actual troops, they've also got a bunch of characters as well. So if you want to have some people to lead the forces into battle, then you've got those options too. And then to sort of round things off, they've also got some massive big old guns. They're going to be boom, boom, booming, as Baldrick would say, across the battlefield and blowing things up on the other side. I was particularly taken by this because I have always been someone who is fed up of seeing Cadians. I mean, I'm sure Cadians are cool, but I'm fed up of seeing Cadians. And so seeing other people, like, for example, Victoria Miniatures and what we're seeing here from Sheerwolf Miniatures, doing a selection of different guardsmen for the future is just an awesome prospect. And it means that you're going to have some very nice individual-looking armors on the tabletop. Obviously, these look a little bit like Death Corps of Krieg, but let's just not mention that and continue to scroll through their Kickstarter page.
Not Death Corps!
Don't mention the war.
He mentioned it once, Death Corps, but I think we got away with it.
That's okay. Good. We're fine.
Good. Yeah. No, but I quite like the look of these. I think they're really good. I like the fact that, for example, when you see things like the Commandant there, well, they've got the horse, but they've also tied in lots of bionics and all kinds of things into the mix as well. And it kind of makes you think that maybe that's what sort of the process that a lot of the troops have undergone as well. Maybe they're on this planet that is completely racked by war all the time. And so the soldiers now, they have to wear the gas mask. Sorry. So that they can sort of obviously protect themselves from all the things out there in the world, but also to hide their horribly broken faces where they've had to have things replaced by bionics and all that.
They're more machines than man.
We are going through the quotes.
Aren't we though?
But no, I just think these look really cool. And there's some really interesting sort of scope for telling interesting stories with this. And obviously that kind of World War One, World War Two aesthetic for the troops as a whole is great for sort of creating a very grim, dark army of the far future. So yeah. Awesome.
They're fantastic for steampunk. Schwerer Friedrich.
I like it. My only problem is they've stuck skulls on them. Like,
of course they have.
Because they have skulls, does that mean they're the bad guys?
Oh my God.
Are we the baddies?
More questions. What if I wanted to feel these as the goodies? No, I can't do it because they've got skulls on their hands.
You get green stuff. Carve the skulls off and replace them with a ratiness.
Oh, maybe we could have a version without the skulls. That'd be amazeballs.
Or you just paint the skulls pink and now they're happy. So.
Happy skulls.
Happy skulls.
That's resin. That'll carve off beautifully anyway. Don't worry about
it.
Oh, it's resin, is it?
Yeah. That's the thing that a lot of people we need to sort of say as well. While Sheerwolf Miniatures do a lot of plastic kits, this is going to be all sort of in their resin material that they do for a lot of their characters and that kind of thing as well. So should be high detail because a lot of the sort of resin stuff coming out of many companies now is. So we'll see some more examples of this in the future.
They've done quite a bit of resin in the past anyway for some of their large cavalry for the fantasy ranges.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, they certainly look the part.
Here we get into the unlocked stuff. Yeah. Flamer guy. Who doesn't like a flamer guy?
Hans.
I like the Death Corps.
Fetch the Flammenwerfer.
Death Corps sort of army aesthetic, the whole gas masks, pointy helmet thing. Mm. So this could be right up my street.
Yeah. Right up your strata.
Right up my strata.
And one of the interesting things as well, when you look at this, you think, oh, they're all wearing armor because that's what they would have done in the far future. But actually, back in World War One, there still were people that wore trench armor and all sorts of things like that. So,
still in World War Two, there was people wearing armor.
Sensible people.
Russians running around with armor plating.
So it's definitely something that has carried through the ages.
Watch out for this guy. He'll capture whole tank crews on his own.
But no, it's really cool what they've actually managed to unlock. Loads of new characters, which I think is really important. And a lot more stuff to make things look a little bit more unique within units, which I think is really good.
I think what it shows is that you're not the only person bored by Cadians.
Yes, very much.
The fact that these are not, I mean, because they are resin, they're not going to be as cheap as plastics. Mm-hmm. And yet people have looked at that and went, Deathcore Army, GW have been teasing us for decades and never bothered really. Forge World did a range that was very expensive. I'm going for this. And, you know, quite a lot of people, it's the same with the other companies like Victoria Lamb stuff doing the conversion work, just to break up the monotony of the Cadians. I'm glad Cadia is gone. The only thing that would have made it funnier is if somebody had got the rock and just flown it into the back of Cadia and just pushed Cadia into the Eye of Terror gates. See what happened then. I wouldn't have minded losing them all.
Yeah. I'm not so fussed on the mechanical horses, though. Because, like, in the studio, John did this army, which is basically, it's like a...
The Prusonians.
Prusonians.
Prusonian army. And it's got regular horses, and it's got a load of Napoleonic-type guys who've been sci-fied up. And it's a gorgeous-looking army. I think it's one of the best-looking armies we have in the studio. And I'd love to field that. And I like the look of this. This is kind of along the same vein, but I don't necessarily like the mechanical horse thing.
Not all of them have mechanical parts.
It'd be cool if you had the options. Like, oh, well, I don't necessarily want horses with mechanical parts.
I don't know if they're in there. There may be options in there because not every horse has bionics.
Yeah. I like the idea of the gas masks and stuff.
Yeah. But horse gas masks are always excellent.
Yeah. But the actual legs and stuff being modified like that. If you're going to modify a horse, you may as well ride around on Big Dog.
No, but then that just means people poke at you and push you over with a hockey stick. What happens when you see one of those?
Yeah, you've got to. No, but they never falls over the hockey stick. Even if someone come up and tried to attack me with the hockey stick, I'd be all right riding around on Big Dog. So what do you need a bionic horse for?
Well, maybe it's the same horses as Big Dog. Try and push it over, the bionics will keep it upright.
Oh, maybe that's right. Maybe this is more...
The self-riding horse.
This is better. This is an all-terrain horse.
All-terrain horse.
Like all horses.
But it's even more all-terrain than your regular all-terrain horse.
Of course, yes.
How many times have we seen horses stuck in the mud having to be shot? There's not a day goes by where I don't see that. So, you know, being able to climb out of there with its mechanical legs, they're probably like bionic legs, like stilts. Just get really big and then just cross the mud and away.
Yeah. I'm sold. You sold me on it. They're Inspector Gadget horses that can get stuck in the mud, can blast themselves out like R2-D2 into the sky and become death from above.
Perfect.
Sold.
They're sky horses.
Is this Kickstarter backed? They must be because they're unlocked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they funded, and I believe they've got about 11 days left when this comes out. So, yeah.
Yep. So funded, 82 backers. If you're interested in a different Death Corp army, this could be the one for you. And if you're like me, apparently you can just carve these skulls off.
Yep.
There you go. Be nice to have no skulls though. Yeah. I'm on a real thing. No skulls. No bat wings on skeletons. So, you know, basically most bony things. I'm sick looking at bony things. Maybe that. But then I like bony skeletons. I don't know.
You're in a weird place. It's lockdown. It's what lockdown's done to you. So.
I've been in here too long.
That's appeared to be the case.
Yeah. Too long. Right, Tappy.
Shall we move on?
Yeah. What is next?
So next up is from the guys at Olmec Games, who a lot of people will be familiar with, who have done Drowned Earth. And this is a Kickstarter that we had an interview for last week on the Weekender. But this is just a quick update on what's going on with their Kickstarter campaign right now.
So it's actually gone live now.
Yes, so the Kickstarter's now live for Olaya Chronicles. I cannot remember for the life of me what the subtitle for the game is. There it is. Raptor Claw Island is the subtitle.
Oh, yeah.
So just to give you a quick brief overview of the game, it's for 1 to 4 players, and it's the actual core box of the Kickstarter is a bunch of standees and a board map. So it's effectively more like a board game than it is a miniatures game, but it takes a lot of the stuff that you learned from the Drowned Earth and all that kind of thing and puts it into the mix. And you can also grade things into miniatures.
I love this bit because I sit and look of this, that's really cool, but I want miniatures, and there it is, but we want miniatures.
It's like they're reading your mind.
So this takes a lot of the characters and stuff that you may be familiar with or maybe not from the Drowned Earth and puts them into the mix. It also throws in things like the dinosaurs, as you can see here,
I think we might even have a painting tutorial in the works for the dinos for the
We do have a painting tutorial in the works for that, yes, which will be very cool indeed. And as I said before, you can either get the game with just the standees, or you can upgrade it with all these different miniature options, including the Corsairs, which are sort of like a sort of NPC faction that is out to get you. You've also got the dinosaurs that you're hunting through the island, that kind of thing as well, as you try to go through the story and that stuff.
There's our Let's Play as well. It's gone live this week.
Yeah,
so we had Justin sit down with James behind the game to sort of play through it, with sort of James guiding him from afar, like a fatherly figure, while Justin played out the game as well, two of them, which is very cool. And then one of the things we wanted to highlight this time as well is the stretch goals. So obviously the campaign is funded and they've been powering through stretch goals like nobody's business, which includes adding a whole bunch of additional hero options into the pack, as well as some new miniatures. And they're slowly working towards unlocking a couple more characters towards the end of it, where we get to see the Pirate Queen, for example, popping up in the mix too, which is very cool. But a lot of the real focus for the stretch goals has kind of been sort of developing like the quality of life for the game itself, and also providing a lot more stuff that translates over from what you have in Alaya Chronicles and into Drowned Earth. So once you play Alaya Chronicles for a bit, you can then potentially take the step and move into the proper miniatures game as well.
Can you take stuff from Drowned Earth into this, or it only goes from this into Drowned Earth?
I'm not sure.
The way this goes, the Alaya Chronicles is like a sister game. So what they've done is that they've come up with a wonderful player, essentially one shot. You can buy into this, never go near the Drowned Earth. Now, there are mechanics in this that do cross-fertilize into the Drowned Earth, because this works on like a cut-down system that Drowned Earth uses. So if you were to port stuff from Drowned Earth in, you'll have to do some work yourself. But what you can do is take things like, there's an AI deck for the, they're not called dinosaurs in this, they've got a specific name, they're like Futurosaurs, but there's an AI deck to run them for Eulia Chronicles, which you can just take wholesale and put into your Drowned Earth game, so you can have them running about. Also, the pirates that appear in this, the Corsairs, can be used as a brand new faction, and can be combined with the mercenaries. So James talked a lot with Justin last week in the interview. So if you're keen on finding out exactly what way it cross-pollinizes, he goes into a lot of detail in that interview last week. So it's worth watching.
Yeah, so we'll have the link down below so you can go and check that out.
I like the dinos.
The dinosaurs are very cool.
Not as much as Warren. He's got what is it? A Saurio Arceus or something at the minute? A Saurio? What was he talking about on the Call the Game show?
I find it best to just tune it out, but...
His Saurio Arceus.
That's what it is, yeah.
Something like that.
It's something that requires cream. I don't know why, but yeah.
So 26 days to go, a little less based on when we filmed this. So what's that, about 23 days to go, something like that?
25 days it'll be.
25 days. Oh, nice. Well, funded. We have Let's Plays.
Yes.
We have the interview last week if you want to know more about the game. Cool stuff. And if you're Call the Games member, watch out for the Dinosaurus or Soriarsis that John's going to paint coming up hopefully in the next week or so. Hopefully before the Kickstarter is over. That'd be cool.
It would be cool, yes. Hopefully it's in the pipeline, so we'll see. Yeah.
Next up, fellas.
So next up is a game that has basically been one of those explosive games on Kickstarter that's taken over everything. And this is called Sea of Legends by Guildhall Studios. And this is a massive new board game that they've been creating where it's for 1 to 4 players. And it's an adventure of exploration and swashbuckling and treasure finding and all sorts of things like that. To read off the kind of sort of the spiel for the game, they said, you can raid ports, bury treasure, fall in love, defeat your nemesis as you compete to become the most legendary pirate in the open seas.
So the game is basically like a board game version of Sea of Thieves.
It basically, yes. Effectively, that is what it is, yeah. What you do is that you'll take on the role of a unique pirate captain that comes with their own skills and abilities and sort of ideals. They will then each have both a love and a nemesis that you'll be trying to either woo or defeat while on the high seas. And they'll also have their own sort of track and quest that they want to undertake as you go through the game. 26 writers have worked together to create 400 unique stories for you to explore. And all of this is done through the use of the Sea of Legends app, which you'll see.
Oh,
so
Jerry and App.
There's an app well, for that.
Just as well, Warren's not here. There's
this sharp the next stabbing pain.
Just hour of conversation would be about this app.
Yep.
So the app provides you with all of the narrative, and it also includes like a effectively a choose your own adventure style story that affects not just you but everyone else at the table. And so it has a lot of different branching pathways and narratives, and a lot of your decisions and the things you do to influence the game could affect other players at the tabletop as well. And one of the big focuses of it is that only one person can win, but there's also some cooperative elements in there as well, because on top of there just being the different captains, as you can see there, there's also a bunch of individual NPC factions that are looking to become lords of the Caribbean and of the Seven Seas as well. So you've got things like the Spanish Armada, the British, the Children of Tulloch, which are like a strange alien race from under the sea, the Dread Tide and the Atlanteans and that kind of thing. So all the kind of stuff that you might imagine to be in a fantasy pirate world exist within this game and are there to try and, you know, embellish the story and add some more to it as well. As I say, the Kickstarter has done particularly well indeed. And they're unlocking stretch goals and doing all sorts of things as well. There's a bunch of additional things they've included, like additional factions, more captains that you can play as, so that, you know, even though it's there's like four in that sort of core set, they're going to give you more options as part of the main game now, so that you've got a lot more choice every time you sit down to play. Because everything's done at the start in sort of like a drafting format where you draft the captain that you want to play as well, which is pretty cool. So it's really nice, and it means that you'll hopefully never play the same one twice. And because of the sort of branching narrative and the fact that you can flip like the lover and the nemesis thing around and that kind of thing as well, there's some real depth in the return gameplay and that kind of thing. I believe Guildhall Studios are actually quite a new company to Kickstarter, but they seem to have created what appears to be quite a interesting and evocative product. A lot of people certainly think so. And there's a lot of gameplay and stuff in terms of videos and things online for you to go and check out as well. So yeah, a very interesting one that I think a lot of people will pick up, especially if they're fans of old games like Merchants and Marauders and stuff as well. So yeah.
Cool.
It's a really unusual effect they've gone with the sea elementals. Because normally if you see an elemental, you go, oh, well, it's going to be a fishman or water beast or something. Yeah, stop. There we go. So the little sea elementals are little water foxes, and the big sea elemental is a giant water bear.
Oh.
It is very cool. It's very different, as you say.
Yeah, I would never put them together.
We're going to make this a sea bear. Yeah.
A harpy. That's cool, too.
Yeah.
I'd get that and scare my sister with it. When we were kids, there was this animation that used to come on TV. I don't know why they kept repeating it. It was some like Eastern European sort of animated thing with a birdie woman.
Right.
She was a regular woman, but then she turned into a birdie woman.
And did that, yeah.
And flew about the place, being all creepy and scary like. But the great thing is, I recorded it because my sister hated it.
Right.
Absolutely freaked her out. So all I needed to do was put it on for a few seconds every now and again if I was sick of her. And as soon as she heard a squawk or a flutter or a little patter of little clawed feet.
Nope. Everybody is going to be Googling Eastern European birdie woman.
I tried to find
it. Was it like an advert or was it a short animation that just got repeated a lot?
Years later, I tried to find it again. Can't find it. I can't figure out what to search for.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, you need to be really careful.
When you type in Eastern European birdie woman,
yeah,
film, you don't get what you expect.
Oh, I don't know. I think I know exactly what to expect with that search. Yeah. Let's just walk away from that one.
So that's problematic, that search. Anyway, where were we? Oh yes, the minis. I really like the
legend.
I think the miniatures are really cool. I think they've done a good job on them. Obviously a lot of these are renders and stuff at the moment, but hopefully it'll translate over into particularly nice finished products.
If it comes out anything like that, it'll be a real nice painter's set. If they get even if you're not playing the game, that would be a cool set of minis to have just sitting on your display shelf, all these little pirates and stuff.
Very true. Yeah. And it would be perfect to paint with all those instant colors that we talked about last week when we were on the show. So, yeah.
Like this, the Children of Tulloch. Tulloch?
Yeah. Tulloch.
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 Certainly one of those.
The Sea's Firstborn, 95 millimeters high. That's big.
What is sounds that? Very Welsh to me. I know it's not, but it sounds Welsh.
How big is 95 mil?
Actually, there's not enough L's in there for it to be Welsh.
Yeah. Oh, actually, wait a minute. That doesn't sound very big.
You shouldn't really be measuring things off screen, Lloyd. That's
does that help, Lloyd?
This obviously isn't to scale, then, is it? because then, or maybe it is to scale, because then the minis would be like this size.
bear in mind, obviously, this is a board game rather than it being a miniatures game, so those kind of things are probably about it.
Even if it's a miniatures game,
still pretty big, but well, considering what Rising Sun did with their miniatures and stuff in the past,
That would be up to his shoulder.
Oh, wow, okay, so it's actually quite big.
So 95 is actually fairly chunky,
yeah, it is. Yeah.
So I could fit it into an army. No problem. Oh, yeah. It wouldn't dominate. It's not like going to dominate or anything.
No.
Nice. I like both those.
So basically, from what we've gleaned from this conversation, is Lloyd's going to buy the game, then he's going to toss all the cardboard stuff out and keep all the plastic.
Well, not to mention the cardboard. I was looking at this going, surely this would be pretty easy to do expansions for. They just basically come out with a new sea map. Wouldn't they?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
A new realm of the sea to go and explore.
Yeah, they could move it away from the Caribbean and put it in a different place. That'd be really cool. Yeah.
Oh, they could stay in the Caribbean for all I care. I like the Caribbean pirates. Pirates of the not Caribbean. Cool. We like it. We could just expand it. I'll just have more of that, please.
Yeah, but Guildhall Studios done a really good job with this campaign. Seems to be really informative, and they've really delved into the sort of what you get in the core pledge and everything that's coming up. It's all very simple and easy to sort of read through, which I think is very important when it comes to Kickstarters. And the beta rulebook, which is always important, is available as part of the Kickstarter page as well.
Look at this, so fun miniatures to look at. Renders, obviously, but we get an idea, but that'd be pretty cool. Mm. So what size are the regular miniatures then? Do you think they're 28 or smaller because it's a board game?
I don't know.
It's
an interesting question. I have a sneaking suspicion if those big things are that size, they're probably on like a 40 or 50 mil base, so the smaller ones look like they may be on something akin to a 25 or a 30.
Yeah, because look at the dice.
They wouldn't be far off a regular 28 mil figure.
Yeah, very cool.
Maybe if you're doing a little bit of role-playing, they'd be pretty cool characters and that kind of thing as well. So, yeah.
Yep, funded 26 days to go based on when we filmed this. Very nice indeed. Mm-hmm. Right, Sharpies. Let me just remind people to comment, like, share, and subscribe for your chance to win the really cool minis that we've featured from, what is it? I keep forgetting. It's Starestro Miniatures. No, Starestro Heroes. Heroes of Starestro.
Stoessi's Heroes.
Stoessi's Heroes. There we go.
So that really nice company that we looked at and spent a lot of time talking about, Stoessi's Heroes. Yes, you can win a set of it's actually five miniatures in total, but a bunch of miniatures from them for their World War II German range. So yeah, very
good. What can I say? I can only keep so many little men's in my mind.
It's got derailed by Fox Water things and my mind mantles.
Like, my mind is now like Tesco's. It's one in, one out. and a queue somewhere over there waiting to get in. Yeah, so if you want to win those, comment, like, share, and subscribe here on YouTube. And if you're feeling up to it, come on over to ontabletop.com, make an account there, get your comment in for more of a chance to win. And we will see you guys next week. But if you're a Cult of Games member, you can join us for more of this malarkey on Sunday morning. See you then on the XLBS.
Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.